Happy New Year, and welcome back for another episode of Legal Marketing Radio. So for this episode, we've got a guest whose area of expertise is a little bit different than a lot of the content we've been featuring on the podcast so far. Ryan Stueman, also known as the Hardcore Closer, is a sales professional who, as you'll hear from him in a minute, built a massively successful sales coaching brand and business empire from what most of us would consider less than square one. Ryan was well on his way to success as a mortgage loan officer in Texas before he wound up penniless and in prison thanks to a trumped-up gun charge. After he got out of prison, a change in the law made it pretty much impossible for Ryan to continue in his career in the mortgage industry. So he decided to take his story, his skills, and his work ethic and build his own business. And the results are pretty hard to argue with. Ryan's blog at hardcorecloser.com gets more than 1 million hits a year. He's got more than 300,000 followers across his social media accounts. He owns 9 different highly profitable businesses. And he's a thought leader who writes about business and sales for Forbes, Entrepreneur Magazine, and the Huffington Post, among others. So, Ryan's here to talk with us this week about the sales aspects of being an attorney and how attorneys can draw from his experiences and methods to become better closers. And for a lot of attorneys who run small firms or solo practices, I think that sales aspect might not be one that they have a lot of time to think about or devote training to, but it's an important one for the bottom line, which is exactly why we were excited to change things up a little and feature Ryan on the podcast. Before we get started talking with Ryan, just a quick reminder. If you're not already familiar with LeFleur, we're a full-service digital marketing partner that works with law firms across the country to grow their businesses and develop their brands. To learn more about us, just check out our website at LeFleur.marketing. That's LaFleur.marketing. We've got lots of other resources there that you can use to improve your firm's digital marketing efforts, including helpful blog articles, ebooks, and other episodes of this podcast. All right, let's get started and catch up with Ryan Stueman, the Hardcore Closer, on this week's episode of Legal Marketing Radio from LeFleur. All right, so joining us on the podcast this week is a guest that we're pretty stoked about. Ryan Stueman is the founder and CEO of HardcoreCloser.com, which is one of the premier websites and brands in the sales industry. Ryan is a serial entrepreneur, a coach, a consultant, a sales professional, and I guess I'd say an all-around hustler. Ryan, is that accurate?
Yeah, you can say I work hard, yes. I do a lot of things, wear many hats.
Yeah, I've been brushing up on you the past few days. I get that impression. You got stuff all over the place, man. So just before we get started, you know, kind of getting into the details, you've got a pretty interesting story, and I was thinking our audience would like to hear about it. You tell it really well. And so why don't you kind of tell us, you know, what you're all about and how you got here?
Well, I am a self-made multimillionaire, but just 10 years ago, I walked out of federal prison with about $25 to my name. I had nowhere to go. I moved into a halfway house because prior to going to prison, I was moderately upper middle class, moderately wealthy. I had made my first $1 million and was married and owned a home and owned about 32 investment properties and had a mortgage business that was flourishing. And within about 90 days into my prison sentence, and by the way, I was in prison for a crime I didn't commit. But about 90 days into my prison sentence, my then wife decided to take all of that stuff for herself while I was defenseless and kind of left me hanging, hence why I left with only $25 to my name. Previous to going to federal prison, I was a mortgage officer. So now I'm a mortgage officer still, but I'm a mortgage officer that's just come off of a 16-month federal prison stint living in the halfway house that needs a job, right? But I've got the W-2 to prove that I used to be really good at it. However, if you'll remember correctly, in 2008 was probably the worst year ever to go back into the mortgage business. I had literally from federal prison got notes where my friends had committed suicide, been divorced, created drug habits. And so long story short, here I am trying to get a job when everybody else is trying to leave that job behind. And I went and applied with the largest mortgage bank in the state of Texas. And for 2 hours, they told me there was they'd love to give me a job, but they just couldn't do it. And when I left there, I left with a job. And within a month, I was the top producer in that company. Within 2 months, I set records that still to this day haven't been broken. And no matter how good I was or how much they liked the fact that I was a very good loan officer. And in 2009, probably the worst year to be a loan officer, I closed 163 loans by myself. No team, no branch, no bunch of partners. I mean, I was just a machine. I had almost 2 years of my life to make up for. I needed some money, you know? Mm-hmm. And in 2010, the federal government passed a law called the Dodd-Frank Act. And in the Dodd-Frank Act, it said you were no longer getting your loan officer license from a state. You would now obtain a loan officer license from the feds. So I had a state license that was still active and good and everything else, but the feds, because of my federal prison time, refused to give me a financial license. So now I can't work. And I didn't know what to do, man. I mean, that's you know, one of those situations you're like, okay, man, I pivoted about three times and come out of this thing lucky. It's only going to be, I'm one pivot away from suicide or something, you know?
Yeah. You know, not trying to be like a cat with like nine lives. You don't want to spend them all.
Yeah. So I hit up one of my friends and I was going to ask him for a job. But before I can ask him for a job, he says, man, what you need to do is, he's like, you got the talent, man. You need to go teach other people. You need to be a coach. You need to start showing other people, motivating other people, showing people how you've done what you've done. Dude, you've been through some shit, man. And I thought, well, dude, nobody wants to listen to me. He goes, dude, you made all this money in like one of the worst times ever, coming out of prison against all odds. He goes, people would love that. And I thought, there's no way. You know, I was trying to keep that a secret. You know, I wasn't trying to go around telling the world that, you know, I got caught with a gun that I wasn't supposed to have. And it was because I had been a drug dealer prior to that. I mean, those are things that are typically, you keep that to yourself and you feel a little shame for it, you know? He's like, just own it. Go handle your business. There's people out there that have been in that situation all across the country. Some of them have been to jail. Some of them haven't. But there's people that could stand to hear from you. And so against my better judgment, I listened to him. And if you know, work real hard and you flash forward 8 years almost to the day, actually, because it was March when I left. But if you flash forward 8 years, then I've been able to coach some of the guys that are on TV. I've been able to work with tons of people that produce hundreds of millions of dollars a year in real estate and mortgages. I have become that guy, all from just being resilient. Just like I put my head down and went to work in the mortgage business, I put my head down and went to work in the coaching industry, and I decided that, you know, there's lots of sales trainers out there. There's guys that are great like Grant Cardone and, you know, guys that are wicked good like Jordan Belfort. And I didn't want to be like them. I wanted to be the wear a t-shirt, wear a hoodie, tattooed up, you know, kind of the bad boy. I mean, just like, I just wanted to be myself. But the one thing that I wanted to bring to the sales community that I don't think the other guys really understood was I knew that most people are actually pretty good at sales, but every sales job I've ever had, the people always needed leads. Right? They're like, dude, I could sell somebody if I had somebody to sell to, just sitting around waiting on leads. And so I decided to create what I call modern sales training, which teaches lead generation and the sales process. But it's very minor on the sales side because most people know how to sell whatever it is they sell. You just need more people to talk to. And because I approached it differently, we offer a product that's not readily available to the sales community through anybody other than us. And because of that, I believe Break Free Academy, which is the company that we do all our training and education and stuff from, has become a multi-million dollar per year operation with, in its first year, we had over 1,000 clients. So people trust us and we've delivered exactly what we've said, but it's been a hell of a journey. And that's just a small portion of it.
Yeah, that's quite a lot to go through. But you know, the cool thing about it, like you said, is that, you know, I think it's cool the way that you own it. I mean, I think a lot of people would be like, wow, you know, if I'm going to get past this, I'm going to have to just erase that part of my history. And you've gone about it a totally different way. And I think it's pretty cool how it's kind of informed what you do now. So I'm just curious. I know you work with people and professionals, you know, across all kinds of different industries. Do you have any experience, you know, working with lawyers or law firms? I mean, that's our primary audience here. And, you know, at first, you know, when we were talking about scheduling this podcast, I was kind of trying to think about, you know, what is our angle here? And the more I thought about it, it's like, you know, I don't think that lawyers normally think of themselves as sales per se, but there is definitely, you know, not only a marketing, but a sales component to what they do, you know, in the way they market themselves, the way they network. And especially, you know, pretty much all the lawyers that we work with are, you know, smaller firms and solo practices where they regularly have, you know, kind of one-on-one meetings, free consultations or initial consultations with clients. And that's basically a sales meeting, right? So I guess my first, you know, curious question is, have you done any work with lawyers before or taught lawyers or anything like that?
Well, I have had to hire several criminal attorneys over the years.
That's an experience and, too, yeah.
And owning businesses, I have two lawyers that I keep on a regular retainer right now to send out, you know, drawer contracts and docs. And then being in the mortgage world, there's lots of lawyers involved with that as well. Mm-hmm. So I have, but on the marketing side, I believe lawyers are a lot like real estate agents. And when I first got into internet marketing, they were lawyers and dentists, I think, everybody's first go-to thing that they go after. So yes, I have helped a few of them. And I believe that lawyers are the second coldest, they're in the second best position to be the coldest closer on the planet, the doctor being the guy in the first position.
Mm-hmm. So can you kind of elaborate, what do you mean by that, that they're in the position to be the second coldest closer on the planet?
Yeah. So, well, I'll start with doctors. They're number one. You know, their close is, if you don't do as I say, you could die.
Or
you
could get
sick. Right. But lawyers, they have the second best, because when someone hires an attorney, when someone has to speak to a lawyer, it's rarely because it's in good circumstance. I've had to hire when you go through a child custody battle. I had to hire a lawyer for that not too long ago.
A family law attorney.
And it wasn't because me and my oldest child's mom were on the best speaking terms, and we would have handled it ourselves. And, you know, I was going there for a negative reason, not a positive reason. And because of that, negativity really works in sales the best. So the lawyer has the second coldest close, because they could say, but you could lose your kid, or you could lose your, you could end up going to jail, or you could lose all your money, or you could get in trouble with the IRS, or you could end up being sued by somebody. Those are real live scary thoughts, especially to business owners, lawyers that provide legal services to business owners. One of the scariest things as a business owner is to have to be sued, not because you might be right or wrong or it tarnishes your reputation, but because you know it's going to cost you so much money. So if I was an attorney and I'm in front of a business owner, I'm going to use that second coldest closer. Like, if you don't have this stuff that I'm trying to sell you, you could get sued and lose it all. Better to pay me 10 grand to set it up from you than to lose $1 million because it wasn't set up properly. And you could use that same exact close better for a criminal defense attorney. Hey, better for you to take my advice and retain me so that I can go talk to the judge on your behalf, or you could end up doing 15 months in prison. Like, those are like negative, scary situations that if you're bold enough as a salesperson to make the claim, especially if you know you can help them, I believe that you owe it to them. But if you're bold enough as a salesperson to make the claim, That's a sale right there that most people aren't going to go, you know what? I'm not really scared of prison. you know what? I'm not really care if I get sued. Like, you don't get those rebuttals. The rebuttals you get are, man, that's a lot of money. I can't afford it. Work with them. You know, hey, well, you know, I've been needing to do this for a long time and I just don't have time to do it. Make time. Right. But you've got the position. It's like, hey, if you don't do this, you're in a serious situation.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think a lot of times if there is an objection, it is financial. And, you know, some of the attorneys that we've worked with have done things like, you know, they create like a payment plan type option or financing options. And that's then one really less obstacle that you have to get past to close, right, in that point?
Yeah, well, what I would do if I was an attorney is I would start a relationship with Sprout Financial. And Sprout Financial, they go out and they give loans to average people and businesses. So you might get a $30,000 or $40,000 loan as an individual, like a personal loan from Sprout. They're one of those they'll loan money to anybody things, so that when someone came in the office and they said, hey, I don't have $10,000 for this plan, it's like, cool, fill out this form, we'll get you $20,000, 10 for me and 10 spend on whatever you want.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Now, one thing that I'm thinking of too, when you're talking about this, I think you're absolutely right on that. You know, I don't think that you necessarily want to resort to scare tactics, but talking to someone about the real consequences of not working with a lawyer is a great way to close. But on the other hand, too, you know, the person that you're talking to may be looking at multiple lawyers. They may have a few different consultations. So you kind of have to sell yourself as well and your qualifications, right? But also one thing, I was watching one of the videos that you posted on Facebook recently. I think you made a really good point. And what you were talking about was that, you know, what people tend to brag the most about or highlight the most about themselves is usually their biggest weakness, right? And I thought that was a really good point. And I think a lot of lawyers understand that too. And so they don't necessarily want to go in a meeting with clients or a potential client and talk about how, you know, they're the hottest shot lawyer, you know, they have the best, you know, record or whatever. They want to mainly speak to the client's needs. So I guess my question is, you know, as you're going through that process of trying to close, trying to get that client, how do you strike a balance between, you know, trying to differentiate yourself from the competition and, you know, not putting the focus all on, you know, what's great about you?
Well, one thing that works really well for attorneys is saying, oh, I've taken on lots of cases exactly like this, right? So they know you've got experience, first of all. The second of all, what I would do if I was an attorney is I would rely on those scare tactics for two reasons. A, reason number one, if I know that I can get the job done, I owe it to them to close them. If I know that I can take their situation, I've done it dozens of times or hundreds of times, I know the judge, I know the DA, I know the other business attorney, I know the other whatever. The second thing, though, is most people want an aggressive attorney. Like I interviewed plenty of attorneys, and the ones that didn't close me, the ones that weren't aggressive, the ones that didn't make me feel a little bit uncomfortable, I didn't hire, because if I got to go apply pressure to another business, or if another business is applying pressure to me, I don't want somebody who's not a closer speaking on my behalf. Most people are very shy and timid. And so what they're looking for is a bold attorney. So when you go in and you're not a bold attorney, they're like, God, this guy's going to speak for us, but he's not really the mouth of the South over here. Mm-hmm. And you really miss the point, because nobody wants to hire. I've never heard all of my wealthy friends, all of the business associates I have, all the docs that we've had drawn at these title companies for the thousands of mortgages I've originated. I've never heard anybody ever say, I'd like a shy, humble, weak attorney.
No, probably not. And, you know, I guess it depends a little bit on their practice area. You know, definitely a lot of the attorneys we work with are personal injury lawyers, and that's a field where, you know, they're going to be up against an insurance company that maybe—
You got to be a shark.
Yeah, you got to be a shark.
Absolutely. I got two lawyers. One of them that is our business stuff, and he's really good at contracts and everything else. And if something happens, he's semi-aggressive. And then I've got another one that when I sick him on people, I feel bad for him.
So you got to have that guy in the back pocket just if you really need to pull the gloves off, huh?
You do, you know, and he obviously costs more. He's a very, very high-powered closer. But, hey, I know that if he makes me feel uncomfortable and does that stuff to me, then, dude, I really feel bad for the people that I've had to use them on. Mm-hmm.
So one other thing I wanted to bring up, you know, when I was just kind of going through your blog articles and your podcasts and going over the things that you tend to talk about, one thing that I noticed that you really emphasize is the importance of lead follow-up in sales. And I feel like that's an area where we come across a lot of firms, a lot of lawyers who they don't really seem to yet understand the importance of that. You know, we kind of ask them about their practices for following up on leads, and it's like, well, you know, we get back to them when we can, and, you know, if we can. And, you know, we're always kind of taken off guard by that, and we try to work with them. But, you know, sometimes they just don't seem to quite internalize how important that is. Can you talk about, in your experience, how important lead follow-up is for a successful sales process?
Well, follow-up, first of all, is paramount to the sales process, period. But most attorneys, they're handling cases, they're handling, you know, dealing with all this paperwork and everything else. And they try to be the salesperson, they try to be the paralegal, then they try to be the trial attorney, and they got to be the salesperson, and they got to do the follow-up. What I would do if I was an attorney, first of all, follow-up's key. But attorneys are lucky because they're in a one-call close situation. Usually when somebody shows up, they can close them right there on the spot, so they don't have to follow up with them. But there's going to be a lot of people that come in from the internet or phone calls that just don't get returned. But I believe that every attorney should have a salesperson, like whether it's a paralegal that does all the follow-up. And obviously you got automation, which companies like sounds like yours can do, and you know, automatic emails and all that stuff that goes out. But I believe that you need to have your paralegal or somebody that's on your staff, even if it's the person at the front desk that answers the phone, the receptionist or whatever, have them following up with people every— hey, because you think about it, somewhere out there, somebody was in a bad situation, they needed an attorney, they've probably been biting their fingernails for 3 days waiting for you to follow up with them. Least you can do is let them know that you can't take their case, so that they know to move on somewhere else, that they haven't wasted time.
Right. Yeah, and I think too, you know,
that's almost key.
Yeah, that sense of urgency that comes with a lot of these cases too is why, you know, I think that attorneys need to understand, you know, if you don't follow up with them, there's a statistic we like to quote, And it's, you know, after the first hour after a lead contacts you, once that first hour passes, the chances of you successfully converting that lead drops by like 50%. So, I mean, they're going to keep making calls. They want to talk with the lawyer right away, right? And so I think that, that you know, quick follow-up, having the practices in place to accomplish that are key.
Yeah, and a lot of them don't, you know, and you know, to one thing, let's just be honest. On one side, that's a benefit because usually people haven't been followed up with. So when they show up to you, they're in a situation where they need an attorney now. But on the second hand, imagine all the people that fall through the cracks because you don't have some kind of communication with them, letting them know that they're next in line or that you can maybe take their case next month or whatever it may be. Imagine, I bet you've got, I don't know, 10 times the money sitting out there if you just followed up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. We see that opportunity a lot too. Another thing I know that you stress the value of a lot is, getting referrals from the clients that you do work with. And that's another area where I think a lot of attorneys, you know they want more referrals, but they don't know how to put the practices in place. And sometimes, you know, they don't want to, they've resolved the client's case successfully. They did a good job, but they don't want to kind of badger this person. You know, they feel bad, I think, sometimes because sometimes people, let's be honest, people can be lazy, right? I mean, you know, a person can be grateful that you solved their case and helped them out, but you know, maybe they forget. They forget to leave you, make a referral, leave you the reviews that you want. So can you talk about some of the techniques that you have people use to get more referrals and kind of boost that whole aspect of the process?
Well, you know, I think I'll just tell you a story. I met this guy named Joe Garza, who's a big time attorney here in Dallas. The guy got multiple private jets. He's the sixth biggest house in Dallas is his. And he must have asked me for referrals three times the first time I was in his office. He hadn't even done nothing for me yet at this point. And he'd already asked me for referrals three times.
That's one approach, just put it up front, right?
Yeah, right. He said, by the way, while you're waiting, go ahead and write five names of other businesses that could probably use my services as well. And he was like very just like, write them down. And I did, you know, I wrote four or five of my friends' names down on that list that I was like, man, they could probably use his services. And I guarantee he called every one of them. I know because they hit me up. Said, did you give this guy my number? and get, you know what? But this guy's got two private jets and I'm not talking no little Cessnas neither. I'm talking G550s and stuff. And like I said, Dallas is one of the wealthiest cities in the country. And he's got the sixth biggest house in this town. And I don't know if you've ever been to Dallas or not, but we got some big houses. It's Texas.
I haven't, but I can imagine, yeah.
That should serve right there, that asking for referrals goes a long way. And he just asked for them, you know. And then when I left, he said, you know anybody else I might be able to help the same way that I've helped you? And I thought, man, yeah, there's a couple more names. I think they'll be glad to hear from you. And the way that I got introduced to him was through a referral as well. You know what? Most people won't ask for them. And it's not, people don't think you're badgery or pushy. If you ask for referrals, it's like, hey, who else do you know that I can help? I'm over here to do business. I'm going to help you. I'm going to do a great job for you. Who do you know that I can do a great job for too? And I think if you act confident about it and you're really sincere about it, people like, hey, dude, better for you to help my friend than some, you know, jackass that's going to rip them off.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's what most people would think, you know.
Right. At the end of the day, you got to believe in, you know, your services, right? Otherwise, why are you here? And if you believe in your services and what you're selling to people, basically, you want to help as many people as you can. And so that's what it's really all about at the end of the day. So one other thing I want to touch on real quick, you kind of hit on something earlier, and you mentioned, you know, a lot of these attorneys are, you know, they're maybe running a solo practice or a small firm and they got to wear so many hats, right? I mean, they're trying to follow up on leads. They're doing their legal work. They're the office manager. They're kind of everything. I'm sure you've dealt with people, you know, before who say, you know, look, I want to work on, you know, some of the sales aspects of what I do and the marketing aspects, but I just don't have time. And, you know, I kind of want to be hands off with this kind of stuff. You know, I just don't feel like I have time to devote to it. I mean, what do you say to someone like that when they're just, you know, kind of struggling to find the time? They feel like they're already spread thin running their business and they don't know how to carve out, you know, time for that as well.
Well, if they're making money, because there's a difference between being busy and making money. Lots of people are busy doing busy stuff. And if I was an attorney, there's no way that I'm going to master marketing. I'm just going to hire somebody to do it. I'm going to outsource it. There's plenty of professionals like you out there that specialize in this stuff that get it. So why would like, I had to spend 8 years in college or whatever it is to get my legal degree. The last thing I'm going to do is spend another 5 years trying to learn how to market my business. Mm-hmm. The problem is, you have to know who to hire, because a lot of attorneys and small business owners in general have hired bad marketers before and lost money. And so you have to know who to hire. But I would just look at the people in your marketplace that are advertising well and getting results, and then I would just hire whoever's doing it for them.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And obviously we think it does too. That's why we're in this business. But I think too, it's important to, you know, when you outsource something like that, or you hand it off to someone, even when you trust them, I think you got to stay engaged, right? I think that's what some lawyers struggle with. I'm sure, you know, you don't, you, from what I see of your business and your various business ventures, you're still pretty plugged into all of them, right? I mean, you don't just put anything on autopilot, I assume.
No, I go to the office every day. And for even for my real estate business where we flip houses, I drive the houses once a week. But I'm in the marketing business, you know, like that's part of my business. Like I coach people on marketing and sales. So it's like and I teach people how to, you know, make money from like investing in real estate with the money that they've made from marketing and sales. So it's important to hands on. It's different from being an attorney where my job is to like take care of people's finances, their business, their corporations or their livelihood. And that's my main focus, and I can outsource the marketing. But even for me, these days, I have an in-house marketing team that I've taught what I want done.
Yeah, and that's the solution that works for some people too. And you know, we're not even opposed to that. Some firms, they got to go in-house. But regardless of what you do, you got to find the right people, right?
Yep.
All right, Rand, we've got to wrap it up for this episode. But we really appreciate you coming on, man. And thanks for joining us. Ryan Stewman is the Hardcore Closer. You can check out his website at hardcorecloser.com. Ryan, thanks so much. We hope we'll talk to you again sometime.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, letting me share a little bit of my story. Hopefully I inspired some people, and I really enjoyed it. Thanks a lot, Stephen.
Yeah, anytime. We enjoyed it too. Thank you. Okay, that's it for this week's episode. We hope you enjoyed catching up with Ryan and hearing his story and his thoughts as much as we did. As always, if you've got a question or a suggestion for the podcast, just send an email to radio@lafleur.marketing. And don't forget to check back in 2 weeks for another information-packed episode. As always, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on Legal Marketing Radio from LaFleur.